This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, Gaius, and Michael Vlahos, Johns Hopkins, is Germanicus. And I made a mistake. I left out one implicit threat by voices that appear to speak for the U.S. government. Appear to. It's not entirely clear, but it's expert opinion that is connected to the State Department and the Biden administration and the Department of Defense. The threat is not our tanks will roll, because the President of the United States has made it clear that he will not deploy major American symmetrical unit ground forces in Ukraine. He's made that clear repeatedly. Maybe it'll change, but he's made that very clear. We're debating the rumors of war that are coming to us here in Londinium from far away, from Rome. And the mistake that I made was that there was only a threat of cost, of treasure cost. There's not. There's an additional one about guerrillas. How so, Germanicus?
Well, certain members of the administration at a level lower than is visible to regular people. In other words, the always amorphous but always cited, quote-unquote, senior Biden officials have essentially made it clear that the U.S. will support a Ukrainian insurgency with arms and training and intelligence and perhaps even targeting. And this all adds up to something historically, potentially horrendous. This is revealed in a recent piece in the New York Times by Helene Cooper, and in it, everything is given away. Explicitly, those notorious senior Biden officials are identified, and it is quite clear that this is not simply an American option, but a tactic, a policy, military campaign that we will pursue, but that others, meaning Ukrainians, will fight in. And essentially, it is one of the riskiest strategic moves I've seen since the French decided to ship a million Charleroi muskets to the American rebels beginning in 1776. Which eventually, as we all know, led to war between France and Spain on one hand and the British Empire on the other. And essentially, any sort of American-supported insurgency in Ukraine, especially if it is proceeding from nearby NATO countries like Poland or Slovakia, which have been identified and are identified in this article, what we will have is a formal accomplice role in the war between Ukraine and Russia. In other words, we will be a belligerent party in the war. And believe me, if we are giving these weapons and creating bases for insurgent training and making forays into Ukraine from Poland, that is going to be a flashpoint, not just of battle, but of tremendous anger for the Russians because of Russian-Poland relations.
2 points to make that occurred to me immediately when I read it, and I was equally flabbergasted when you pointed it out to me. The first point is that the Russians know all about leaving behind. They all know about partisans. The partisans beggared the Hitlerite war machine before Stalingrad, but certainly after Stalingrad. There were famous Russian generals who took cavalry behind German lines and raided the Germans as they retreated across the Russian plain. So the Russians know a great deal about partisanship. The second thing is there's something romantic about this, Michael, as if the Washington history readers have seized upon what pleases them, which is the left behind in the Philippines under the Imperial Japanese Army, or the left behind, the fantasy of left behind in the first Cold War, You know, right. When the Russians were going to overrun America, all those fantasies. There were going to be sleeper units that came alive. And when I read what you pointed me to, I believed that's what drove me to read that Boudicca section. I think the memory of what war is has been momentarily lost because it's not a chess game.
This is absolutely true. And the U.S., having promoted a giant insurgency against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan back in the late 1970s and through much of the 80s, was itself a romantic enterprise, as Americans who were there understand it to be. And it has been sentimentalized since as a kind of nostalgia. In other words, an admiral, a retired admiral, James Stavridis, who, after all, was commander of all NATO forces and was interviewed by the newly elected President Trump, president-elect at that point, to be Secretary of Defense. He is just gushing in his support of such an insurgency, and he makes a remarkable statement. First of all, he romanticizes how great America is at supporting insurgencies and skipping over the insurgencies that we created, like the one in El Salvador that failed, or the insurgency that turned against us in Afghanistan, et cetera, et cetera. But he then says that the level of military support, and I'm quoting him, for a Ukrainian insurgents would make our efforts in Afghanistan against the Soviet Union look puny by comparison. And what that tells me is that there is an inevitable, and I mean inevitable, capacity and an unknown set of parameters for this capacity to escalate the war that Russia might have with Ukraine into a general war with NATO. And it will also, I believe, provoke a NATO split where the older NATO, dominant NATO states are going to back off, like Germany, and the more martial, shall we say, I don't want to say warlike, but the more martial frontline NATO states like Poland are going to be eager
right.
to engage.
Right.
And the result is going to be a very rapid escalation ladder for conflict between the U.S. And Russia.
I'm glad you mentioned escalation ladder because we're still in the midst of this. Russian Federation, Kremlin is saying that negotiations have failed. Diplomacy has failed.
Yes, they've had it straight out.
The U.S.
has not. Lavrov has said it. So yeah.
The U.S. has not commented. So we're still in that in-between period between rumors of war and war. But is it your position, Germanicus, that the escalation is underway or hasn't started yet?
Well, the escalation is underway, and I should say, from a precise strategic standpoint, that the threat of the U.S. as conveyed by this New York Times article is that the U.S. would pursue a strategy of aggressive insurgency against Russia and Ukraine only if Russia occupies the whole of Ukraine. And I think the Russian plan is likely to be different. I mean, the actual Russian invasion, if we can call it that, is going to be focused on Ukraine, essentially east of the Dnieper. And it's going to be an operation that will essentially destroy and capture much of the Ukrainian military.
Will it remake the European security assumptions? Will it remake them all, or will they live in denial the way they did after Georgia, the way they did after Crimea? Everybody will go back to business as usual and say, "Oh well, that's just the Russians."
Well, what my sense is that having fantasized like Mr. Stavridis about the glories, the romantic glories of conducting insurgencies against, you know, the Dr. Evil or the great evil enemy, I think the U.S. is going to be shaken by a Russian invasion and immobilized. And I think Europe generally with a couple exceptions like Poland, but NATO will be split. And Europe will desperately want to try and find some way to get this to stop. Because any kind of escalation involving all of Russia's cyber attack capabilities, Russia's capacity to cut underwater pipelines, which they've just shown, and the fact that the gas will be cut off to Europe during the middle of winter, Europe is not in a position to say, oh, yeah, let's create an insurgency. I think, on the other hand, the U.S. is going to be in a position where it has to back down. That will be a defeat. Yes. And Russia, of course, all Russia has to do is dramatically reduce the Ukrainian military in a lightning attack and then say, ah, we're ready to negotiate and withdraw our forces. And then to perhaps have a readjustment where Donetsk and Luhansk republics, quote unquote, will be coterminous with the original borders.
All right, we'll leave it. We'll leave it
there. The Oblast. Yeah,
it's time for us to get to the amphitheater. I just want to state the conditions that the Washington Post identified within these last 24 hours.
Right,
there are 85,000 Russian troops, a number of battalions that can operate independently. There are 15,000 volunteers from Ukraine in some fashion, whether they're from Ukraine or other parts of the empire, I don't know. It's those 15,000 who will be those who are left behind, who will occupy east of the Dnieper, if it doesn't go any farther than that. And here's what worries me, Germanicus. It worries everyone. War is always neat before it starts, and then it gets
right.
Very messy, and there's no obvious exit, none whatsoever. And at that point, you lose all sense of where you are and where you're going. And it's not an accident that every time you and I talk about the history of warfare, there's never an ending. The Korea War is still going on, Germanicus.
Absolutely.
And the Cold War, this is the Cold War. We took a hiatus of, 30 years, and now we're back at it.
The Romans, remember, shortly after our time, lost yet another legion north, above Hadrian's Wall. So, I mean, the threat is always there, and the battle is always there.
Yes, Boudica's dead, but Boudica comes back. Michael Vlahos is Germanicus. I am Gaius. We're off to the amphitheater. I hope it's not the Greeks. This is John Batchelor.